6-3 Nevada Gaming Commission v. Stephen Wynn. Counsel, are we ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
We are, Your Honor.
And Your Honor, before I get started, just a quick question. Should I leave the mask on when I'm up here?
While you're up there, it's fine. We're all socially distanced.
Okay. So then
vaccinated.
I will take it off then. Thank you.
Okay. And would you like to reserve any time?
Yes. 3 minutes for rebuttal, Your Honor.
Okay.
Good afternoon, and may it please the Court. Keel Ireland on behalf of appellants, the Nevada Gaming Commission, and the Nevada Gaming Control Board. The Nevada Gaming Control Act, the legislature found that strict regulation of the gaming industry is necessary to maintain public confidence and trust. To that end, the legislature granted the Gaming Control Board and the Gaming Commission exceedingly broad authority to regulate gaming, including the full and absolute power and authority to revoke any finding of suitability. Despite that broad and explicit grant of authority, the district court here determined that a person found suitable can unilaterally end an investigation or disciplinary proceedings against him by exiting the industry. That conclusion undermines the agency's ability to carry out their legislatively prescribed duties and is contrary to the Gaming Control Act's text. The decision below should be reversed for three reasons. First, the district court lacked jurisdiction because interlocutory commission orders in disciplinary proceedings cannot be challenged by petition for judicial review or a writ of prohibition. Second, multiple provisions of the Gaming Control Act grant the agencies the explicit power that they are exercising here. And third, even if the Gaming Control Act were ambiguous or silent on this question, the agencies are owed deference for their interpretation of the governing statute.
Counsel, I have a question. This is Justice Silver. Why wouldn't the fact that in March of 2018, the Nevada Commission's removing Wynn from its location report on the Wynn license, on the Wynn Resort license, why isn't that akin to the Massachusetts Commission's finding that Wynn was no longer a qualifier because he no longer exercised control or provided direction and would no longer hold a financial interest in the gaming establishment in Wynn, Massachusetts? So as a result of the Massachusetts finding, he was no longer a qualifier, and the commission there didn't take any further action in his individual capacity. So my question is, isn't the removal of him from the location report the same kind of finding? And if not, why not?
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, I think in the first place, it's important to distinguish a license from a finding of suitability. Licenses can expire automatically, and this location report is related to the Wynn Company's license. A finding of suitability under our Gaming Control Act does not have any kind of automatic expiration. This case will always come back to what did the legislature intend for the Gaming Control Act, because it's a question of administrative authority. And there's nothing in the Act that provides that the removal of someone from a location report or even a finding that they're no longer currently involved in the gaming industry ends their finding of suitability. So that means that the commission had authority to consider discipline against Mr. Wynn for acts that he allegedly committed while he clearly was materially involved with a licensee. Yes,
Mr. Ireland, if I might, this is Justice Herndon. Going back a little bit, presumably Mr. Wynn, had findings of suitability back when he was running Mirage Resorts, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
So when the Mirage was opened and any other properties under the canopy of Mirage Resorts were opened, those findings of suitability were in place, yes?
Yes.
Did he have to get a finding of suitability each time a property opened under that umbrella?
Your Honor, I'm sorry. I'm not sure exactly where the limits of that finding of suitability was. Generally, a finding of suitability is issued for a particular role. And under the Commission's regulations, the Commission may require, but it need not require you to get a new finding of suitability each time you change roles. So I'm not sure exactly what happened in this case. I'm sorry. But it's possible.
No. That, That's okay. But when he divested himself of Mirage Resorts and then ultimately started Wynn Resorts, he was required to get a new finding of suitability, correct?
Yes, the commission at that time did require him to obtain a new finding of suitability.
And why would that be? If there had been no reason to revoke his prior finding of suitability, why was he required to get a new finding of suitability other than the fact that the finding of suitability expired when he divested himself of involvement in the gaming industry?
Because the commission determined in its discretion that in his new role, he was required to get a new finding of suitability. And there might be an argument that ended his prior finding of suitability. That's not an issue in this case. But that's not the situation we have here, where he has not obtained a new finding of suitability. He's not sought a new finding of suitability. The last one on record is the one from when he was associated with the Wynn Company. And that's the finding of suitability that was in effect when he allegedly committed these violations of the Gaming Control Act.
Mr. Ireland, this is Justice Hardesty.
Thank you.
I'd like you to address a more fundamental question. This comes to us on an appeal from the district court's determination of a petition for judicial review of what appears to be an interlocutory order. Why did the district court have jurisdiction to do that? In the arguments, you cited Carbo. There's Harris. There's NRS 463.318 subsection 2 that all seem to preclude a petition for judicial review of actions that are under consideration by the commission. Would you comment?
Yes, Your Honor. We completely agree that both Section 315 and Section 318 preclude interlocutory review of a commission order in disciplinary proceedings specifically. And this court already decided that question in Resnick. Resnick was a challenge to a discovery order in the process of a disciplinary proceeding. And this court held that you can only file a petition for judicial review after there's a final order or decision in a disciplinary proceeding. And
Excuse me. On this point, let's say we accept for purposes of argument that this is an interlocutory review and therefore judicial review doesn't apply. Does subparagraph 2 of 318 also remove the prerogative of writ review in this context where it's a disciplinary proceeding under 310 to 3145, and the statute seems to me to say it grants you, but then it takes it back. It says extraordinary common law writs or equitable proceedings are available except where statutory judicial review is made exclusive. And so my question to both counsel is, doesn't this same statute make judicial review exclusive and only and limit it to a petition for judicial review of a final agency order?
Yes, Your Honor. We believe your reading is entirely correct. The first part of Section 318, subsection 2, makes the petition for judicial review the exclusive means of challenging commission orders or decisions in disciplinary proceedings. Now, there might be other types of proceedings where there's other forms of review, but in disciplinary proceedings specifically, there's only the petition for judicial review. And so at the end where it says that extraordinary common law writs may be available, again, like you, as you pointed out, Your Honor, that's not true where judicial review is the exclusive means of challenging a commission order.
And Mr. Ireland, I have a follow-up.
What do you, Justice Hardesty, I'll yield.
Thank you. I have one other clarifying question. There's been a fair amount of discussion in the briefing and the like about Mr. Wynn's suitability finding. But the way I read the complaint, you are seeking fines as well. And you're seeking those fines for violations of the alleged violations of the act while he held the license, while he had a finding of suitability. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. And under Section 310 of the Gaming Control Act, I think it's pretty clear that the commission has authority to retrospectively fine people who committed violations of the act while they're involved in the gaming industry. So even if you took the revocation of the finding of suitability off the table, there still would be a live issue here for the commission to consider discipline.
So even if we were to credit the argument that a finding of suitability cannot be reviewed by the commission because of the disassociation of Wynn from Wynn Resorts, it would seem that if a gaming licensee can walk away from the gaming property, they could absolve themselves of potential fine exposure for violations of the Gaming Act. Is that correct?
That's correct. And I think something that's important on that point is what that would do for deterrence. For an unscrupulous person involved in the gaming industry, they would be faced with a win-win proposition. If they violate the act and they get away with it, then that's great. If they violate the act and they get caught, they can simply sell their shares, divest themselves from the industry, reap the benefit of whatever violations they committed, and then hope maybe one day for a new board or a new commission and attempt to reenter the industry there then. So that's why this kind of being able to discipline someone who committed violations while they were materially involved with the licensee, but then attempt to escape the jurisdiction or the authority, that's why it's so important for the agencies to have authority to still discipline those people. And if I could just build onto that point, one more thing. Also, one of the allegations in the complaint is that Mr. Wynn violated an order to appear. And as far as I read Mr. Wynn's brief, there's no argument that the agencies wouldn't have authority to discipline him for violating an order to appear. He's a witness within the meaning of the statute. And at this stage, there's no factual dispute that he violated it. He's free to bring that up once the disciplinary proceedings begin. So even, again, if we take the findings of suitability issue off the table, that would be another basis to remand to the commission to hold disciplinary hearings.
And Mr. Ireland, if I could just clarify in terms of the subpoena power and getting a witness into a hearing, that subpoena power, is it your view that that subpoena power isn't limited by the fact that whether someone has a license or a finding of suitability or not? In other words, could anybody who might have relevant knowledge be subpoenaed?
Your Honor, the statute says any witness, so I think it would have to fall within the definition of a witness, which again, at this point, there's no dispute that Mr. Wynn would qualify. And the ability to punish someone who violates the order to appear, I think, is an inherent power of the order itself. Subpoena in Latin means under penalty. That's how important the penalty is to the subpoena. And the same thing would apply with the order to appear. It would be a dead letter if there was no punishment for a violation of it. And I see that.
I have one more question, and that is, what do you make of your interpretation of this? You could go after Wynn any time during his lifetime for discipline. There's no expiration on that power. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor. As I said before, it comes down to the line that the legislature drew. And unlike in many other licensing contexts, the legislature has not put an expiration date or any means whereby a finding of suitability goes away by operation of law. So in this case, it is true that the agencies retain authority until the person potentially gets a new finding of suitability or dies. But I don't think that the parade of horribles that Mr. Wynn puts out there, that the agencies are going to try to dig people up decades after they leave the industry, is realistic. The agencies have scarce resources to enforce the Gaming Control Act in this state, and they're going to put those resources to the best purpose possible to maintain public confidence and maintain the integrity of the industry. And just, I know my time's running out here, but just to talk very quickly about why that was necessary in this case, these are very serious allegations against Mr. Wynn. They're laid out on page 2 of the joint appendix, some of them, and this is not a case where he's alleged to have missed a filing deadline or not paid his gaming taxes. They include that he allegedly exposed himself to employees, he made inappropriate comments and touching, and that he coerced sex. This was against gaming. Yes? Sorry, Your Honor.
Counsel, following up on Justice Pickering's statement, what she just said, if that's an act of misconduct, at least penal statutes, and here you're looking at fines for violation of these, for this misconduct, you have statute of limitations. As a prosecutor, I couldn't have prosecuted somebody for cheating at gaming after 3 years. And yet you're saying that you, at least the commission, can in fact discipline somebody for decades-old acts under this statute. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Your Honor. The important point is that a statute of limitations, as its name suggests, is a creature of the legislature. And again, the legislature has not created any kind of statute of limitations here. If there really is a concern that a former member of the industry would be prejudiced by a delay like this, then there could be equitable defenses like latches that could potentially apply. But that would be a determination for the commission in the first instance to make. That would not be something that revokes their authority, but it would be part of the disciplinary proceedings themselves. And I would like to reserve the rest of my time for a rebuttal, if that's possible.
Okay, since we chewed into your rebuttal time pretty good, I'm going to give you 2 minutes in response, 2 minutes in addition as well.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court. My name is Colby Williams. I represent respondent Stephen A. Wynn. I appreciate the opportunity to be in front of you today. I think it's important to start with the questions that Justice Hardesty and Justice Pickering asked with respect to the propriety of the writ relief that was granted below. Because, frankly, I was a little surprised when I read the agency's reply brief because they completely changed their position on this issue. As it relates to judicial review under 463.315, the agency's always argued that this was an interlocutory order and it was not subject to judicial review under that statute. No question about that. That was their argument, and they prevailed on that argument. Judge Escobar agreed with them that this was not a final decision and it was not subject to judicial review under that statute. But what the agencies always acknowledged below, at least, was that the district court had discretion to entertain an extraordinary writ, either a writ of mandate or a writ of prohibition. You can find that in their briefs below at the record, because I think this is important. At the Joint Appendix 357 to 58 is where the commission acknowledged that, and at Joint Appendix 486 is where the Gaming Control Board acknowledged that. Now, while they said that the court should exercise its discretion to deny the writ, it never said the court was precluded from entertaining it. That argument only arose in the reply brief that was filed by the agencies for the very first time. So setting aside that that is an improper way to raise that argument and it's a change of position, I don't think that it's meritorious on substance either. And for this reason, while 463.318 subpart 2 is a little bit confusing, as Justice Pickering noted, because it clearly contemplates the provision of extraordinary writs. It then says, unless judicial review is exclusive or it's otherwise excluded. We're not worried about excluded because that deals with the situation like gaming licenses being denied. The courts have no role in that, and that's not this type of situation. You can't review that either through judicial review or a writ. But as it relates to the exclusivity of judicial review for disciplinary decisions, that's only under a decision made pursuant to 463.310 to 463.3145. The very argument the agencies were making is that this decision below did not fall within that statute, that range of statutes. That's why it wasn't a final decision. That's why judicial review didn't apply. But then that does mean writs are available in our reading of the statute. And with respect to the propriety of writ relief here, I don't think there's any question we tick all of the boxes as to why writ relief is appropriate. Number one, we're dealing with a question of subject matter jurisdiction. The court has always recognized jurisdiction, be it an issue of personal jurisdiction or subject matter jurisdiction, is appropriate for writ relief. Number two, even when there's an adequate remedy at law, the court has recognized that writ relief is appropriate to resolve an important question of law that needs to be resolved. Nobody is disputing that we have an important question of law here that needs to be resolved. Third, even in the context of gaming, the court has recognized in the Glusman case that when the issue revolves around primarily statutory interpretation, then that is not going to be deemed an intrusion into gaming disciplinary actions. You know, if we're just being asked to interpret, or if the court's just being asked to interpret, what do the statutes mean? And that's really what we're here talking about.
Mr. Williams, this is Justice Hardesty. May I interrupt your argument with a question?
No problem.
I understand your argument, but I don't know that it takes into account quite a bit of history in our jurisprudence. Harrah's, gaming control versus district court, state versus 8th judicial district court, where the court has said repeatedly that Article 6, Section 6 of the Nevada Constitution, which sets forth the jurisdiction of the district courts, does not authorize court intrusion into the administration, licensing, control, supervision, or discipline of gaming. That phrase has been repeated a number of times and even in different contexts, including a decision by this court in Tate versus State Board of Medical Examiners, in which that distinction was pointed out when contrasting this issue with the Board of Medical Examiners' handling of a disciplinary matter against a physician. Could you comment, please, on whether the Constitution subverts or contradicts your argument?
Yes, Justice Hardy, I'm aware of the provision. It comes up in the state, I believe it's the state versus the state gaming control board matter that the agency cited. It's about a 50-year-old opinion where they made the same point that the provision in the Constitution you just referenced precludes review. But I would submit, respectively, that decision predated the implementation of NRS 463.318 subpart 2 that expressly contemplated the availability of writs. And that's not the only statute that contemplates the ability for courts to look at matters involving gaming. 463.343, a different statute, contemplates that people can file declaratory relief actions and ask the court to interpret gaming statutes. And that's what we're doing here, Your Honor, with respect to the issue of the threshold jurisdiction of the agencies to act being governed by statute. That's what we're seeking clarification of. And I would point out in some of the cases that you cited, Your Honor, there's a big distinction because unlike in several of those cases in which the party ran to court and sought a stay of proceedings of whatever was going on with the board or the commission, that is not what happened here, Your Honor. We cooperated with the agency's counsel and set up a framework because we all recognized this was an important issue. And we agreed on a stipulation whereby we briefed this issue first to the commission. We did not come running to court. We wanted to develop the record in front of the commission, which we did. When we received an adverse ruling there, we entered into another stipulation, which was again approved by the chair of the commission, who continued the stay of proceedings regarding the disciplinary matter while we got this important issue presented to the court at the district court level and now here. So for all of those reasons, Your Honor, I think this is a different situation than the cases that you were just citing and why the constitutional provision that you cited doesn't control here.
Would it be necessary if we were to write an opinion that supports your position to overturn all of those cases that rely and point to the rule of exclusion in Article 6, Section 6 of the Constitution? That's not been requested below or here.
No, and I'm not requesting it now, Your Honor. I don't think that needs to be, there needs to be any cases that are overruled because this is a different factual setting. The way that we've got here was different and was approved by the commission and specifically the chair of the commission, and we're not asking the court to interfere in a substantive disciplinary proceeding. What we're seeking clarification of is the interpretation of certain gaming statutes.
Well, let me touch on that point a bit if I can. My understanding is that the complaint seeks not just an issue with respect to the revocation of the suitability finding, but also requests the imposition of fines for alleged misconduct while Mr. Nguyen was the holder of a suitability finding and a license. Are you, under, at least under the district court's ruling, it would appear that the commission's ability to seek those fines and to seek that discipline is precluded simply because he left the industry. Is that your position?
It's our position, Your Honor, that Mr. Nguyen's findings of suitability ended when he resigned his positions as CEO and director.
No, I understand that argument. I'm asking about whether he is the subject or can be the subject of fines for conduct that is alleged while he was a holder of a finding of suitability and a license. Are you saying he cannot? Because the district court's grant of your petition or writ or whatever, however one characterizes it, seems to preclude the commission from even seeking that.
Well, Your Honor, and I think that is tied, number one, to the definition of findings of suitability. And then as that definition is applied in the context of NRS 463.310. And our argument is, and what I believe the district court agreed with us on, is the following. Once Mr. Nguyen's findings of suitability ended, if you look at the language dealing with fines in 463.310, and that's specifically in subparts 2B, dealing with the commission, the board's ability to recommend fines, and in subpart 4D, the commission's ability to impose fines, the language used is in the present tense. They can only impose fines against someone who is, quote unquote, is found suitable. By the time this action was instituted, Mr. Nguyen's findings of suitability no longer existed. And Your Honor, this court has made clear use of the present tense means something when it's used in a statute. And so I would submit the answer to the question you asked is yes. If Mr. Nguyen's findings of suitability have ended before this disciplinary matter was pursued, then no, he cannot be fined under the plain language of the statute. And Your Honor, I think one of the key things to think about here is we're dealing with administrative agencies. And I know how important gaming is to this state. No one is arguing that at all. I get it. Everybody gets it. But there's still an administrative agency, both the board and the commission. They only get their powers from the legislature.
Mr. Williams, this is Justice Kadish in Carson City. So under NRS 463.310, which you were just talking about, under, for example, subpart 1A, the board shall make appropriate investigations to determine whether there has been any violation of this chapter or certain other chapters. Wouldn't this investigation be encompassed by that and not just authorized but required by the word shall determine whether there has been any violation?
No question, Justice Cage. The board is empowered to conduct an investigation, or maybe in some cases it's required. I'm not disputing that at all.
Okay.
And it did do that, and it did result in discipline. It, Nguyen Resorts, the entity, was fined $20 million, agreed to a fine of $20 million. So an investigation was certainly permitted, if not required, and there was discipline imposed as a result of it. But what we're talking about now is the board and the commission wanting to impose discipline against Mr. Nguyen individually. And getting back to my point with respect to them being agencies, the delegation of power has to be clear. It has to be clear. And I would respectfully submit reading any of these five different statutes that gaming is directing you to, telling you, look at this power we have to go after someone who's no longer in the industry. I submit it's not there. And the best way to recognize that is the legislature knows how to grant this power when it wants to. It's done at least 12 times in different industries, dealing with doctors.
Mr. Williams,
yes.
You just said that the board had the power under 463.310, when Justice Kitas asked about 1A, and how do you reconcile under 4D where it says it can find each person or entity or both, which is found suitable?
Right.
I mean, it's part of the statute.
With respect, I'm sorry, Justice Silver, you're saying subsection 4D saying what?
It says it obviously has the power to fine each person or entity.
Right.
You are arguing that, well, the entity was, you know, appropriately fined, but that they don't have the authority to also fine the person. But under the statute, they do have that authority.
Absolutely. You do have, they certainly have the power to fine individuals who, using the language of the statute, someone who is found suitable. An officer remaining at the company, absolutely. They could pursue discipline against and fine that person. The president or a general counsel or whoever who is still affiliated with a licensee, absolutely.
But what
I'm saying is that Mr. Wynn's findings ended. He is not within the language of the statute. He is not someone who is found suitable at that point.
Mr. Williams?
Yes.
But an officer who commits malfeasance, alleged malfeasance, who leaves the company, then is inoculated from any discipline, right? Under your theory. So if they leave, they're just free pass for them. Is that right?
Arguably, there could be. I would submit that is not what happened here. There was no free pass for Mr. Wynn, but I understand.
No. That's the question, though. Is Mr. Wynn going to be held accountable for acts that occurred while he was under a suitability finding? So are you telling us that when he leaves the company, he will no longer, if appropriate, be held accountable personally for any acts that occurred during that time period before he left the company? Is that your position?
For purposes of gaming disciplinary actions, yes, that is my position.
So, Mr. Williams, if I could, I just want to include the full part of subsection B. Fine each person or entity or both, which is licensed, registered, found suitable, or found preliminarily suitable pursuant to this chapter or chapter 464, or which previously obtained approval for any act or transaction for which commission approval was required. Why wouldn't that language encompass fines imposed on someone who had a license or had a finding of suitability and left?
Because, Your Honor, I believe when that statute is referring to approvals there, that's a different category than a finding of suitability. If you go look at Regulation 4.030, it defines the different types of approvals that gaming gives. You have licenses, both restricted, non-restricted. You have findings of suitability. You have some others. But then you also, if you look at the last category, it's approvals, quote unquote. Basically, a type of approval that doesn't fall within one of the other categories. So when they're talking about someone who received a prior approval, I believe they're talking about that category of approvals as opposed to findings or licensees, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Chief, could I follow up?
Sure.
So, Mr. Williams, I want to go back to one of the, I guess, sort of the point you started with based on some of the issues with Mr. Ireland. To NRS 463.3182. Mm-hmm. And so you pointed out that it wasn't until the reply brief that the gaming agencies made the argument that extraordinary writ relief was precluded. But in your answering brief, you quoted this subsection 2 and quoted the section that says extraordinary common law writs or equitable proceedings are available, and ended your quotation there before it says except where statutory judicial review is made exclusive, right?
Absolutely, Your Honor. We argued both below. We argued, number one, that we thought it did fall into a proper review for judicial review under 463.315, because we characterized this as the language, and I won't repeat everything here. We said it was either a final decision or order. And we said because of the disjunctive that we qualified for judicial review under that. Now, we lost on that. Judge Escobar disagreed with us.
Right.
But we always had alternatively argued that writs were available. And once we lose on the final decision issue for judicial review, then that exclusivity, our position is, does not apply anymore. And we are entitled to pursue writ relief under that
and
statute.
And so the sentence before this, or two sentences before, that says that judicial review is the exclusive method of review of the commission's actions, decisions, and orders in the disciplinary hearings. Why do you say that doesn't make it exclusive and thus preclude writ relief?
Sure, because it goes on to say held pursuant to NRS 463.310 to 463.3145.
Right.
That's the final disciplinary decision that we were just talking about. The board was arguing it's got to be a final decision under that range of statutes, and you don't qualify. And it turned out they were right on that argument.
So weren't these disciplinary proceedings under that those statutes that set out the disciplinary process? Isn't that what this complaint is filed to start that process?
No question it's a disciplinary proceeding, but it wasn't. But the decision that resulted from it does not fall within those statutes. That's gaming's argument, that we didn't qualify for review under those statutes. That's why we say the writ relief was available.
Thank you.
And I have a follow-up question on that. And you're at something of a disadvantage, Mr. Williams, because I don't see 318 subparent 2 making an appearance in this proceeding until your until the agency's reply brief at pages 3 to 4. And so I don't have the briefing that I would otherwise have on that, but is it your position that they stipulated or waived their way out of subparagraph 2 and its seeming applicability?
Well,
because they didn't raise it in a timely fashion?
I certainly think it's an improper argument that was raised in reply, but I'm not here to you know, level criticism. It is what it is. But my point that I think is more important is this. If you read their briefs below, they took the opposite position. That's where I have a problem. When we were in front of the district court, their argument was, Judge, you have discretion to consider these writs. We just don't think you should. On appeal, on reply, for the first time, they now say the court didn't even have discretion. And that's where I think the problem lies, Your Honor.
Okay.
You would agree, though, Mr. Williams, wouldn't you, that the posture in which this case is presented to us is de novo review?
I do. Absolutely, Your Honor. And I didn't have time to get into why I don't think the court owes any deference to the administrative agencies. We'll have to rely on the briefing for that. But there's no question it's de novo review. I agree.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions, colleagues? All right, Mr. Ireland.
Thank you, and maybe I can pick up right there on that 318 issue. This issue was fairly raised in the agency's opening brief. On page 14, one of the headings is that the district court did not have authority to review the commission's interlocutory order. And as Justice Stiglitz pointed out, it was litigated between the parties on this appeal. 318 subsection 2 was raised by Mr. Wynn, and then it was responded to in a reply brief. But even if that wasn't the case, as my colleague on the other side explained, this is a subject matter question, and subject matter issues cannot be waived. If the district court didn't have subject matter to review the commission's order, then it must be reversed, even if the commissions had, or the agencies had waived that argument. The other issue I'd like to address real quick on 318 subsection 2.
Mr. Ireland?
Yes.
I apologize for interrupting. This is Justice Herndon, but I do have a question about something that Mr. Williams raised, and that is the statutes, the gaming regulations, to the extent the language speaks in present tense to present relationships with the gaming industry, and the legislature, as you pointed out at the end of your original argument, has the power to go in and enact very specific things. And in other areas of professional practice, they've enacted statutes that point towards reaching back to people whose licenses have expired or have voluntarily removed themselves from the profession. But they didn't do so here with the gaming regulations. So how is it that that fact we should somehow read into this, the existence beyond the end of one's involvement with the gaming industry?
So I'll answer your question one second. First, I want to apologize. I said Justice Stiglitz. I meant Justice Kadish. But to answer your question, Justice Herndon, the reason that there is no legislation like that is because a finding of suitability is different from all those other licenses that either expire or can be voluntarily surrendered. It's not like an attorney's license where you can resign. And because of that, we have to have some kind of rule that says, well, if discipline is pending, you're not allowed to get out of it. In this case, there is no expiration date for findings of suitability, so it was not necessary to have any of those rules in place. And just to quickly wrap up, like Justice Stiglitz, I think it's important to think about what the rule Mr. Wynn is asking for here. He's asking that he be allowed to allegedly violate the Gaming Control Act while materially involved in the gaming industry with impunity, with no ability to discipline him afterwards. We submit that that's not what the legislature intended, and the district court decision should be reversed, and the case should be remanded so that the commission can hold disciplinary proceedings. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, colleagues. Any additional questions for Mr. Ireland? Nope. Okay. Thank you for your presentations today and the briefing on this matter.